Declan, let's get to a choice then. And in fact, this will bring you back in some ways. It's Charlie Parker in The Dirty South, John Connolly bringing out a new book. But he's going into prequel land with this, is he?
Very much so. This is the 19th in the Charlie Parker series that John has published. And for those who aren't familiar, Charlie Parker is a classic private detective in that very American mold. But when he first appeared in Every Dead Thing, which was back in 1999 now, it was very much a supernatural backdrop to the novel. And that kind of strand has continued on. And that was quite bold at the time, the idea of splicing those kind of very diverse...
The supernatural into genres. The... Because everybody, it sounds fine now, but he was doing it for the first...
Well, largely because John Connolly did now it's entirely acceptable. 19 books on, we're going back to the origins of Charlie Parker, because in that book, Every Dead Thing, and I won't say too much about it because we don't want to spoil it... He's emerging from a real tragedy.
Yeah.
And John has over the years had people say, can we not know more about this, story?
This tragedy,
essentially,
yeah.
Dirty South is going to provide the where Charlie Parker came from. And for people who are not familiar with John's work, yes, he is a best-selling crime novelist. I still think he doesn't get the credit for his ability as a stylist on a line-by-line basis. He's a beautiful writer. And not just as a crime writer, he is divergent into different genres and so forth. But this should be and could be not only the kind of crowning achievement of the Charlie Parker series, but I think it could also be a very clever marketing ploy, because by bringing in a prequel that, establishes how Charlie Parker started, it could very well encourage people to start
into look at the other 18.
Absolutely.
And one thing I want to ask you about this too, Arlene, and I don't think either of you would have a series quite of that length in terms of the character that Connolly has given us with Charlie Parker. But when you write a prequel like that, to what extent did he probably have to go back and look at all of the books and say, I better not say anything here that messes up what I wrote in book 15? Would you have a lot of joining of the dots and a lot of fact-checking, if we could talk about facts with a fictional character?
I would imagine so to a certain extent, but... Because I think John has lived with this character for so long, and he would almost be kind of wearing him as a second skin. I would say to a large extent that Charlie Parker and he, as a writer, are almost interchangeable. So I would say that, a lot of that information that you're suggesting needs to be fact-checked is probably at John's fingertips as he's typing. Now, you'd have to ask John himself that, but I would suggest there's maybe less than you might think.
And I wonder too, Arlene, in terms of crime fiction in that nature, when you go back and you do a prequel, is he opening up the potential maybe for filling missing gaps in Charlie? I don't know how many missing gaps there are.
Maybe so, because it's never just about Charlie Parker in the books. You have to look at the connections between Angel and Louis as well. Yeah. So if you're going back to sort of the prequel, who are Charlie's very close, very good friends in the novels. And so if you're going back to Charlie's start, you have to go back to their start as well, and how they became involved with Charlie Parker, and how the bond between the three men is just indescribable.
Yeah.
It's just they're so closely connected that it would be really interesting to see how they became they're not his sidekicks, they really have they're a force all of their own. So I'd love to actually think it would be really interesting to see how they all came about.
Right. Any idea when we get to what part of the year? Is it the early
part? April.
April.
Which is amazing because his last novel was like 700 pages. I don't know how he does it. I saw it and I saw Declan's piece and I knew the book, I knew he was working on the book, and then I was thinking, how is this even possible? It was like the last one was a doorstep.
I didn't think maybe this one's another doorstep.
That would not surprise me.
Yeah, okay. We're looking ahead to another great year, hopefully, in the arts. Sinead, we're talking about Anne Enright here. She was in with me before Christmas and speaking about the writings that she had published during her time as the laureate for Irish fiction, the inaugural laureate, in fact, for Irish fiction. Probably took her away from her own writing, but now she's finished with the laureateship and there is a new novel on the way.
There is a new novel, and actually you mentioned the book awards at the start of the programme, and I would hate to be judging the Irish novel category next year because of everything that's coming out, including Anne's book. There's a new Emer McBride, new Colm McCann, Alan McMonagall, Sebastian Barry, Elaine Feeney, loads of debuts, Nisha Dolan, Niamh Campbell, Rachel Donohue. There's a lot of stuff on the horizon, but I think an Anne Enright novel for a lot of people is always a bit of an event, and this again, she's got a great ability ability to sort of go to different places in her work. And this is about a family, but not really about a family. It's actually more about a mother and a daughter. So it's called Actress. And the titular actress is a woman called Catherine O'Dell. And she wasn't originally an O'Dell at all, but she's been built up with this kind of famous Irish fiery-haired actress, a kind of a Maureen O'Hara type figure.
Is this purely fictional?
It's very, very fictional. I mean, I think there are a couple of... when I was reading it, there's definitely a couple of characters who you'd recognise, I think, from the Irish acting world of the 70s. He'd certainly pick out. But it's about her life and her career. So it looks as it not just about being involved in cinema and leaving Ireland and making it big in America, but what happens to stars and how Hollywood often sort of overworked stars, and then when they had no use for them anymore after a certain age, particularly women, what happens then. But then she's also a parent and a mother. So the story is told from Nora, the daughter's point of view, who is looking at her with a lot of adoration, but also noting her absences and feeling the kind of weight of that. So it's also kind of contrasts Hollywood and Ireland. She captures Ireland brilliantly, that kind of like the crappy sitting rooms and the lack of decor and the Catholic stranglehold that was still going on in the country then, morally, in a lot of ways. So the contrast of the US and... So the daughter sort of wants to find out more about her mother, but also is trying to find out about her father. She's not as convinced about the identity of her father as maybe some parts of the books would suggest. So it's very... It's really... it goes very deep on Irishness, but on cinematic, and it's also really interesting to read in the context of Me Too, I think, as well, what happens to actors and actresses and the secrecy to kind of hold on to your career that can happen.
And how early into the year can we expect that? Do you know?
It's February. Same month as Eimear McBride's Strange Hotel, so two great Irish novels.
And that's the beginning of the year.
Yeah,
I know.
What are we going to do?
What's it going to be like by the time we get to the end of the year? Welcome back to this special New Year's Day programme where we're looking forward to the arts in 2020. With me in studio, Sinead Gleeson, Arlene Hunt, Declan Burke and Kate Brennan-Harding. Owen Colfer is where we're heading to next, Declan, with you. Not just the books in this case, we're looking at finally the film version of Artemis Fowl. What are we getting?
Well, finally is the operative word, Sean, because we've been a long time waiting for this. The first Artemis Fowl was published back in 2001 and became, a global sensation. There's 20 million plus books sold. We're looking at it started out as a teenage criminal mastermind who's just a complete genius. And that was hilarious at the time. And then over the course of the 8 or 9 novels, Artemis Fowl becomes a much more complex and interesting character, particularly for the young adult audience that it's aimed for. And the reason I've picked the adaptation of Artemis Fowl is that for quite a while now, the young adult audience, movie-going audience, has been looking at a Harry Potter-shaped hole on its screen. And I think that the Artemis Fowl, if they get the first one right, that's always crucial. If they get the first one right, there's a possibility of an absolutely blockbusting franchise. A lot resting on the shoulders of young Fergus Shaw, who makes his debut as Artemis Fowl, plucked from obscurity and so forth. The early word is very good. Kenneth Branagh is directing. Will bring a certain amount of gravitas to, I think, the project. And Judi Dench, of course, is there in the background, which is always a welcome sight. So, all the elements are there. The story is terrific. The character is brilliant. Great director. Good supporting cast. We're keeping our fingers crossed because this could really smash it.
And you had also, Arlene, you had also mentioned this as one you were looking forward to. Any particular, what's the biggest worry with the adaptation of Artemis Fowl to the big screen? What would you worry most about?
I think Declan nailed it. So much rests on the character of the main actor, and he has to carry it and he has to give it all the charm of the character and all of the brilliance of the character. And if you don't get it right, like I was thinking about, I recently watched the first episode of his Dark Materials, and I felt like I'd just been plucked straight from the book, and I haven't watched the rest of it now, but that's the idea that because everyone has an image in their head of what characters are and what they look like and what they sound like, and I don't know if it's too jarring or if it's not right, it really just throws you right off the plot. So I just hope everything pulls together and comes together, and it's just brilliant.
And you're staying in the young adult world choice of book that you have for us, a book called The Gone Book by Helena Close. Is that her name? Helena Close. Who is she, first of all?
Helena, she's a native of Limerick and she's been writing for the last 20 years. She's published 7 novels, 4 of which were co-written. And she won the prestigious Bridgeport International Short Story Prize in 2016. And so this is her, this will be,
number eight, I think, the number eight book. And it's going to be published by Little Island Books in April.
And what story are we getting here? Is it a young adult story?
It is a young adult. It's very much always teenagers in Limerick. Yeah. And it's about a young man called Matty, who's 15. And for the previous, Matty's mom walked out on him when he was 10. Now, Matty has got an older brother and a younger brother. His older brother, Jamie, and his younger brother, Connor. And he lives with his dad. And he has no idea why his mother walked out. She just walked out. She left. She left all her three children and her husband and vanished without a trace. And so for 5 years, every occasion, like when his granddaddy died and all the things, the pivotal moments that he had in his little life trying to make sense of things, he wrote them all down in this little diary that he called the Gone Book, because it had gone months and the gone years. And it's just all of his emotional, because he's trying to keep everything together. It's a very masculine household. He doesn't want to sort of make things worse for his dad, and his older brother is going through his own emotional problems of being left, you know. And so it's this really, there's some pages in it that are written in his diary form from when he's 10, and the spelling mistakes in it, and he's trying to make sense of his world. It just actually break your heart. It's just really, really affecting.
The dad has cleaned up his act.
So the dad has, like, he had obviously had drink problems and stuff like that, and so to counterbalance, so like, you know, he's the way he was previously, he has now turned into a complete health freak. He runs, he does half marathons, he goes to his meetings, you know, he's held together by wire almost. That's, you can kind of get the sense from the dad that he's really just holding on to everything, like he's just basically wired together. And none of them have, including the father, none of them have dealt with the issues. Like, they've not dealt with the grief. The boys haven't dealt with the abandonment issues that they have. And so when you meet Matty, he's now 15, and he brings with it everything that a 15-year-old has, which is, you know, anger and mistrust. And he kind of wants his friends to support him. There's a great little supporting cast in this, like, of boys and girls. It's great. But at the same time, he pushes them away as much as he can, because he doesn't want to be that 15-year-old that's breaking down crying in front of his friends. And all he wants to do is skate and surf and get interested in girls. 15. He just wants to be a 15-year-old. And it's almost impossible to do in the household that he's in. And then things completely go pear-shaped when his mother arrives back to the town with a new family. And it's just, it's devastating. Right. So I don't want to say any more about it, because I don't give away the plot. Yes. But it's a really moving and genuinely incredible book. And I just hope, for a young adult's book set in Ireland, set in Limerick, you know, it's just really.
Yeah, you'd want it to
the
do
language
well.
Is great. It's really, they sound like kids. They don't sound like sort of affectations of children. They sound like
an
kids.
An adult's version of a kid.
They sound like kids.
Little Island, by the way, will be the publishers of the book.